Welcome to the ADHD Alchemy Podcast, where women with ADHD finally feel seen, understood, and unapologetically themselves. If you have ever felt like you're too much and not enough all at the same time, you're in the right place because that's the alchemy, learning how both come together to make something priceless. I'm Jessica Covington, holistic ADHD coach and fellow fancy brain, and I'm really glad you're here. Let's get into it. Welcome to ADHD Alchemy. Guess what? It's more than a podcast. It's also my signature coaching program at Fitology. I built it for bright, sensitive women who are tired of feeling scattered and chaotic and ready to feel calm, clear, and fully in their strength. Inside the program, whether it's group or private, you'll finally drop the mask and start thriving. Together, we quiet the relentless inner critic, break old patterns of procrastination and self-sabotage, and begin redefining ADHD on your own terms. So in just a few weeks, you'll find yourself more grounded, confident, and leading your life with intention by learning to work with your fancy brain instead of against it. This is where your too much becomes your magic and where real lasting change starts on day one. If that speaks to you, find more at fitology.com, and that link, of course, will be in the show notes. Now today, I am so excited to have Lisa Holtz here. She is an Ivy League educated mom of two who found herself in burnout and depletion several years back, even though she was already an expert in natural health and wellness. That started something of a quest for her to understand what her body and mind truly needed in order to thrive and to help her children do the same. She's the founder of the Embodiment Project, which combines her education, life experience, and professional training in energy and bodywork to help people reconnect with and fully inhabit their bodies, wisdom, and power. So Lisa, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
I'd love for you to start off by describing that deep pit of depletion and exhaustion that you felt after your second delivery. I think so much of your story is really common to new moms, and we end up often blaming ourselves for it.
Yeah, I had my first baby when I was almost 40. And we started trying for a second baby when I was, I was just before 40. We ended up experiencing pregnancy loss and took about 2 years to conceive my second daughter. So I think when I had her, I was already running pretty depleted. And I can laugh about it now, although it was not funny at the time. It was a pretty dramatic emotional roller coaster that we lived on for an extended amount of time, which compounded the stress and dysregulation in my system. But after she was born, COVID hit, the pandemic hit, and I was at home largely on my own with a baby and a four-year-old. And remember waking up most days feeling like I didn't know how I was going to make it through the day. I was unable to put together like sequence basic tasks to complete for myself. All of my attention and energy was focused on my children and to some degree my husband. I really started to recognize the impact it was having for me when it started showing up as pretty extreme irritability, as rage. I had never experienced the amount of like rage that I was moving through my body as I did in that really depleted postpartum time. And it didn't feel like me. It felt like something else was taking over my body. And it was not who I knew myself to be. It wasn't the mother that I wanted to be to my children. It wasn't the partner that I wanted to be to my husband. And yeah, it was impacting every part of my life. And there was a time at which I was even questioning, like, what is my role here? If I can't pull it together, what is wrong with me? And what am I even doing? So yeah, I was questioning everything at the time and struggling to a degree that it was even hard to admit to myself, let alone seek help from anyone else. So I'm not sure what more I can say about that other than, I can share a little bit about how I started to climb out of that, if that's helpful.
Yeah, it is very helpful. And I recognize myself in parts of that story too. I'm curious how that experience began to open your eyes to the possibility of your own neurodivergence.
Yeah, you know, I think I used to joke without having any real perception of what it actually meant. I used to joke when my kids were very little that I had motherhood-induced ADHD. And basically what I meant by that is I just started noticing in my daily life, like I couldn't clean the house by starting a load of laundry and then completing a load of laundry. I was like starting to clean the bathroom, then throwing in a load of laundry, then tidying up the pile on the counter in the kitchen. And then, you know, it was like, I felt like a pinball machine moving around my house throughout the day, constantly moving and always circling back to eventually finish tasks. But there was never like a straight line between what, like start and finish. That, and I did experience a pretty intense form of executive dysfunction in the sense, like I started to describe earlier, that I was unable to really like think about what needed to happen for me and for certain tasks throughout the day and actually like put it all in sequence and order so that it made sense for me to like actually take the steps. Everything felt overwhelming. I was like experiencing all of it at one time is kind of the best way that I can put language to it. Which kind of just like short circuited me in a way.
Yeah.
And I started noticing, you know, especially because it was during the pandemic and most of our interactions with the outside world were online, it coincided in some ways with this kind of uptick in people starting to talk about this. And I started recognizing myself and my own experience in the content that other people were sharing. And it started to dawn on me finally, like, oh, actually, maybe this is like part of who I am. And maybe it extends way beyond this postpartum period where it's been extra intense. Maybe it's actually something that's been part of my life ongoing. And when I started to reflect back on the earlier part of my life, I started to recognize some of the things in my experience earlier on that also kind of lined up with the experience of being neurodiverse.
Yeah. If there is a silver lining to the pandemic, that may be one of them, that we all started to talk about it a little bit more and more openly. In fact, you have a great analogy for what it feels like to live in a neurotypical world with any kind of fancier brain. Can you share that?
Yeah, I can't take credit for this. It actually comes from a friend of mine who I've had some pretty lengthy and deep conversations with about our own pretty similar experiences. And that's that there was like a time in school growing up where we were sick one day or we missed school for some reason. And that was the day that they handed out the guidebook for life. Like, this is how it all works. And I never got the guidebook. She never got the guidebook. And I think a lot of us have moved through life feeling that way. Like, how does everyone else, like, this just all seems to come so naturally to other people. Why does it feel so laborious for me? Or why does it feel so challenging for me to sometimes do those daily, maybe simple things? You know, we're processing it all so differently that they may not feel that way for everybody.
Exactly. That's such a classic tip off when you feel like things look so easy for other people and they feel so hard for me.
Yeah.
So in your work now as a body worker and healer, you work pretty directly with the human nervous system. Can you talk a little bit about sensitivity and the attunement of both individual and larger collectives of people?
Yeah, this is I'll try to keep this as concise as possible because this is where like my world is kind of blowing up right now. But I think I
Yeah,
originally
please.
came. What's that? I originally came to the field of energy and body work at a time when I had was also extremely dysregulated and was experiencing anxiety attacks or like panic attacks and was on the like more extreme ends of anxiety and depression. And I recognized when I first started practicing yoga and working with energy and movement that it had an enormous impact on how I moved through the world and my ability to stay present with all the things that were happening in my life at the time. And it wasn't too long after yoga came into my life that this other practice of Thai body work came into my life. And it felt like such an expansive but also grounding practice for me. And I recognized that it would also serve that purpose for other people. And at the time, it was like such a gift to find something to do for work that was quiet. It didn't require language outside of like the initial communication and the wrap up at the end of a session. I could communicate and allow all of the information that I received from people in these other ways, energetically and visually sometimes, although there's like, the scent, the different senses, layers of sense that we have through touch and through being present with somebody else. I was able to be with all of that information and do something with it and like have a positive impact on in someone else's body and life and also in mine. And so it has always felt like such a gift to be able to work with other people in that way and to have found a way of working in the world that suited my nervous system and benefited me and my, it helped me be more of me, if that makes sense. And so I've been practicing body work and energy work for over 15 years now, with some time off when I was extremely depleted postpartum and in those early years of mothering two children and the pandemic. I was not practicing for a little while during that time, but I've gotten back into it in the last few years and recognized that the importance of this level of work is so vast in the world right now. The world has obviously changed a lot in the last 15 years too, and especially in the last 5 or 6. And the need for people to have more resilient nervous systems is so vast right now that I recognize I needed and was ready to start expanding beyond the one-to-one work with like me in person, hands-on with one other nervous system. And so I've started to look more deeply into like, how can I take this experience of working in person, physically and energetically with someone, and kind of extrapolate that into working with more than one person? How can I put it into words, because we communicate through language, how I see all of this is connected, and how can it be offered in a way that invites people into a deeper understanding of themselves and also begin to have some concept of how the macro, or I always mix up these micro and macro terms, but how the collective experience is actually just a reflective of all of our individual experiences and vice versa, where it's always mirroring each other. And so I can see now, and this is something that I've just recently started exploring and writing more about, is that we have a collective nervous system. Like the earth and all of its inhabitants have a collective nervous system. We in this country have a collective nervous system. We in the smaller communities we live in have a collective nervous system. And so it's always like getting down to the quantum level of things and starting to understand how that connects to these like bigger issues that are at play is like endlessly fascinating to me. And I feel like my deepest work right now is processing all of it in a way that I can start to communicate what it is that I'm seeing and understanding as it unfolds in real time.
Yeah, no small feat.
No, I just got a little bit like worked up and tired thinking, or yeah, overwhelmed talking about it. But I do, I feel like it's
You hold
important
a,
work. Mm-hmm.
yeah, without a doubt. Now, you hold from time to time an incredible masterclass called The Miseducation of Modern Women. Could you highlight a couple of the concepts that you teach in this class?
Yeah, so the form that this work is taking for me right now is that I see in the broader sense that the like sacred archetypal feminine is not represented in most of our dominant systems. And I think that's one of the foundational pieces of the bigger challenges that we're facing in the world right now. And because I see how this like individual collective is always mirroring each other, I have sensed for a long time that the only pathway and most direct pathway forward is by more and more individual people learning how to experience life in their bodies in a different way. Where I'm going with this is because the feminine has been kind of missing for so long at this point, I think women, particularly women in midlife right now, because we are the ones that are bringing children into the world, we're having the most direct impact on the next future generations. We are moving into this time in our lives where we're still actively engaged in creating and producing in the world, and we're in more and more positions of leadership. And it's like so critical that we connect with our bodies and the deeper foundations of power and wisdom that live in them. And so, yeah, my work, kind of going on a tangent here.
Tangents are welcome.
I may be a little bit off your original question here, but essentially, the masterclass that I've put together is identifying this kind of historical arc when we as women started getting severed from these the fundamental aspects of the feminine power and wisdom that we have access to through our bodies, and examining to some degree where we're at right now, you know, looking at the actual social research and lived experience of women in the world right now, and then offering what I see as the path forward, which is a path that begins within each of us. And because we're always mirroring the collective as the most direct and like quick pathway to broader collective change, because when we in our own lives and our own homes inhabit a different sort of energy or frequency or authenticity, it's the impact is almost immediate, that like ripple effect of our relationships change with our children, our relationships change with our spouse, those relationships change with the people that they're interacting with in school and in work and, you know, in the broader world. We show up differently in our communities, and there's this level of collective resource that happens when it's, I feel it almost like a tipping point, like when enough of us individually have learned how to like truly resource ourselves from within and within, you know, like our realm of what we can control, then I think the impact in the broader world is going to be pretty rapid and profound. So it's like it's
Certainly
partially that we've
profound.
been miseducated and partially that we have missed a whole piece of our inner our of our education around like who we are physically and the foundations of the currents of energy that move through us and where we have access to power and wisdom and purpose and connection.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can't help pointing out here that the recognition of patterns and the connection of dots that you are describing in all of your lived experience and research and learning is often a great strength of differently wired thinkers. So I couldn't be more grateful that that this has all come to you and that you're now bringing it into the world. Can you say a bit about balancing input and output? You mentioned resourcing. How, what are the ways that you keep yourself fully resourced and showing up in the way that you intend to?
Well, it's a practice. And I would say, in general, I'm letting go of the idea that I'm going to always be regulated. Or maybe I'm just changing the definition of like regulation. And it's more a matter of, like you said, identifying what my specific system most responds to in terms of like, what are my baseline needs to feel in my body and connected to my wisdom and power and energy. And life is always happening. So I'm working a lot right now. I've been working for the last few years on like, what are my baseline inputs that I absolutely need in order to feel resourced? And that has everything to do with what you do in your work around nutrition and movement and time outside. You know, like, light has started to play a big role in my life and my circadian rhythm, connection to nature in general, and, you know, like, connecting with the frequency of Earth. Rest, certainly, sleep and relationships. And so what I found, and maybe this is just a byproduct of feeling so overwhelmed for so much of my life, is that reducing input in a lot of ways is one of the most potent strategies for me to stay connected within. So really setting some firm boundaries around the amount of time that I spend on screens and definitely on social media. I don't think my nervous system is built to be processing the amount of information that we're exposed to when we're scrolling. And I'm not sure a lot of nervous systems are built for that, but that might be a totally different conversation. And yeah, just really focusing on presence in every aspect of my life. Like,
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm letting go of the idea also of multitasking, in the sense that like, I only want to be doing one thing at once. If I'm with my kids, I want to be with my kids. If I'm engaged with you, I want to only be with you. If I'm spending time in nature on my own, I only want to be tuned into that. I don't necessarily want to be listening to a podcast, although I'm not saying that doesn't ever happen. So yeah, it's really, for me, it's a journey of learning what I need to be resourced, letting go of a lot of the things that bring me out of or deplete my resources, I guess. And just paying attention within, having a deep enough relationship with myself, my own intuition, that I can make the right decision for me in the right moment based on all the stuff in my life and world that I don't have control over.
Most definitely. It's so important to understand, I think, that those kinds of experiments that you just described, trying out taking a break from social media, trying out going out in nature without some sort of other input, those kinds of experiments are really important to do. And our needs may change over time. They may even change by context, but giving stuff a try, I think, is it's kind of underrated these days because maybe because there are so many people out there saying this is the way to go, this is the one thing you should be doing, and we tend to be quick to believe that. But it's also really important, as you said, to listen deeply inside and know what's right for you, be willing to shift and change that as needed.
Yeah. I would,
Now,
could I offer something really quickly?
please, yes.
I think we're conditioned to always be looking outside of ourselves. We've grown up in a world that taught us to always be outsourcing our authority. And that's one of the fundamental pieces of like bringing the feminine roots of power and wisdom back online, is reconnecting with the inner wisdom that we carry and reclaiming our inner authority. not to completely exclude that like external authority. There's obviously people that are experts in things beyond where I am an expert in it, but also honoring and integrating like what my inner authority has to say about something or yeah. I think that's it.
So important. I'm glad you brought that up, especially in the realm of people who are women or girls or assigned female at birth. I think you said we get conditioned. We are taught to give up that authority and to actively ignore what we know is going on inside. Coming back to that sounds like just sounds like a dream, actually.
Yeah, it's a dream and also a journey. One that we need each other for. We need to have conversations about it. We need
You're
to,
right.
yeah, we need to be in relationship in order to like really experience and embody it.
Yeah, that's so true. The community piece is essential. So before we hopped on here today, you had mentioned some challenges around transitions. Can you say a little bit about what you mean by that and how it shows up for you?
Yeah, I think the most obvious example for me is that for a large part of my life, especially once I had kids and there were a multitude of additional things I needed to think about and plan for and do in preparation for different transitions in our lives, even just like leaving the house to go do something, is that the way my nervous system works, and from what I understand personally, part of that means that my nervous system is taking in a lot more information than some other nervous system in any given moment. And so there's a lot more that's happening, and there's a lot more energy that's required for me to move from one thing to the next and be changing environments, be considering other people's needs, be monitoring my own needs. There's like so much more that goes into that for me that I never consciously allowed for the time and space for that processing. And so I would schedule my life and I would like organize my time and my days with like thing one thing lined up after another. And by the end of the day, I might have gotten through it fairly successfully, but I would be completely drained, like wiped out, and then potentially even drained for like a day or two after that. So I started to notice like, okay, if I build in periods of time, even if it's just like 15 minutes of extra time to let myself move through this process, to prepare for it, to like fully arrive wherever I'm going, then everything starts to go more smoothly. And I don't finish my days completely wrecked. Now, this is like I said, I have a lot of things that I can control in my daily life, and I have gratefully, at this point, a lot of flexibility around my schedule and determining my schedule for myself. That said, I am a mom. I have kids. They're involved in activities. We have, family and holidays and travel, and there's all these things that happen in our lives and that we choose to participate in our lives that throw off whatever that sort of like processing parameters that I've set up for myself. So yeah, it's really just about recognizing, like, oh, I traveled over the holidays. My whole family was dysregulated for 5 to 6 days, and we got back and dropped right into school. Of course, I, as like the frequency holder for my family, of course, I'm going to need like 2 to 3 additional days of not doing a whole lot, like just focusing on the basics for me to recuperate and to process and integrate all of that stuff and to come back to myself. So there's these like daily transitions, moment to moment transitions, and then there's these like bigger things that I experience that I've just learned I need to accommodate for it. It sounds simple, but it's hard to do in the world that we live in, especially with the
Absolutely.
programming that we've grown up with.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, I think that's so important. And I love that phrase you said, the frequency holder for the family, that really put words on a feeling that I've had for the longest time, maybe ever since I had kids. It's kind of blowing my mind right now. Frequency holder is really important.
It
And
is.
it highlights all of this work that you do around the body and energy field and all of it.
I just recently, this insight just dropped in the last few days, and I'm kind of just sitting with it still, but I've been trying to like intellectually figure out how energy is related to the nervous system. And I know I've seen other people's work in this realm, but what dropped in for me really was that the energy is the language of the nervous system. It's maybe one of the languages of the nervous system. And yeah, there's a lot happening on the energetic level that our nervous system is responsible for organizing for us. And when we become moms, especially parents, but especially moms, I feel like we center ourselves. We are the nervous system for our child until their nervous system has developed enough to be separate from us, which is 7 years, according to some research. So yeah, we, especially in those early years, we're holding the container. Our nervous system is holding their nervous systems.
Yeah, exactly. So, speaking of things energetic and future-oriented, what do you think the future holds for the whole range of neurotypes? Or what would you like to see the future hold?
Yeah, I actually see a future in which there is not necessarily something that's called neurotypical anymore. I think neurotypical is a term that may have, it's like a function of the dominant systems that we live within. And it's essentially just a term that identifies the specific type of neurological processing that is the best match for the systems that we're living in. And I think there's a pretty broad range, spectrum, of course, of different nervous systems and different ways in which our nervous systems can interact with the world. And ultimately, I think we're moving in the direction, and I really hope that we're moving in the direction of reorganizing our systems to accommodate a broader range of neurotypes. And I think that's probably like we could go a lot deeper with this, but I think I'll probably just leave it at that. I feel like there's a lot that needs to happen systemically in order for more of us humans in general to be able to operate in within our systems in a thriving way.
Lisa, I have learned so much from you in just this short time. I'm so grateful you're doing this kind of work, and I just know stories like yours are going to help other women know that they're not alone in this. They're not alone in feeling like they are the frequency holder, and they're not making it up. They actually are. For people who want to reach out and find out more about you and your work, how can they reach you?
My website is embodimentproject.com, and the best way right now is to get on my email list. I have been sending out weekly emails that really are more offering different insights and explorations of a lot of these topics. And I will be offering the Miseducation of Modern Women masterclass periodically throughout the year. There is a subsequent kind of program that's like a foundations and feminine well-being oriented program. And yeah, there's a lot to come. We're like moving the Miseducation of Modern Women masterclass into book form. So that ebook will, if all goes according to plan, be out next month, February, March of this year.
Outstanding. That's exciting. So, thank you again so much for your time. I will, of course, drop that website into the show notes. Thank you again so much.
Yeah, oh my
Really
goodness.
appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you holding the space for this type of conversation.
Time for your lab kit ideas from this episode that you can start using today. Experiment number one, the check-in. A lot of women spend years thinking that the problem is a personal failure, especially when we have ADHD. So instead of asking, what's wrong with me, reframe that into asking what's wrong outside of you. What if this is a system problem instead of an internal problem? Think about a challenge in your life, whether it's focus, organization, emotional overwhelm, or work-life balance, and ask yourself if you've been treating this as a character flaw. What if it's actually a systemic flaw? What is it that you need that you're not getting? What support or strategy might exist that I haven't explored yet? You don't have to diagnose anything today. You don't have to figure it all out right now. Just allow the possibility that your experience deserves curiosity instead of criticism. Experiment number two, the reset ritual. ADHD brains often struggle with transitions. Work doesn't stop when work stops. It follows us into the evening. It lives rent-free in our heads all night long until we get to work in the morning. Instead of that, try a 10 to 15 minute transition ritual between work and home. During that time, you can add, if you'd like, one small sensory action. Play a song that you love, light a candle, take a short walk if you can, or maybe sit quietly with tea and feel how warm the cup is. The goal here is not productivity. The goal is making a mental and emotional shift of gears. It's telling your nervous system the workday is finished and the time outside of work is about to begin so that you can really get present and be in this moment the way you want to be. Experiment number three, interrupt the mind reading. So if you have ADHD, you might also have a very sensitive radar for social signals. Something like a short text message, a delayed reply, a neutral tone or facial expression, and suddenly your brain is conducting a full-on investigation into what's wrong, what might have gone sideways, and what probably you did wrong. The next time that happens, know that you probably didn't do anything wrong. Just pause and ask yourself, what are three other explanations besides they're mad at me and I did something wrong? If you have ADHD, you're probably pretty creative and you have a great imagination. So put that to work here and imagine what else might be going on for that person other than something personally against you. Maybe they're busy. Maybe they're driving. Maybe they're just tired. Maybe their children are sick. Your brain is wired to scan for danger instead of positivity. But sometimes giving it a few alternate stories is enough to calm that alarm system. That's your Alchemy Lab kit for today. I hope you will pick one experiment and let me know how it goes. My pleasure. Thanks for listening to the ADHD Alchemy Podcast. If this episode had you nodding along and thinking, yeah, that's me, make sure you're subscribed and consider sharing it with another woman who might feel a little more seen and a little less alone because of it. Together, we are rewriting the ADHD shame story into one of strength. I'll see you next time.